This episode is brought to you by Hill's Pet Nutrition. Every shelter pet deserves a second chance, and you're making it possible for thousands of them every day. Because when you feed your pet Hill's, you help feed a shelter pet, which helps make them healthy, happy, and more adoptable, changing their life forever. So they can change yours. Over 14 million shelter pets fed and adopted. Science did that. Visit hillspet.com/podcast to learn more.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to Unlikable Female Characters, the podcast about women who don't give a damn if you like them. I'm Lane Fargo, and I am here today with Amina Akhtar. She is the author of the critically acclaimed fashion world satire, hashtag fashion victim, and her latest book, Kismet, is out on August 1st or July 1st if you are an Amazon First Read subscriber. Welcome, Amina.
Thanks for having me. I'm excited to be back.
Yes, you were on the show way back when. It was probably like 2018, 2019.
I think it was 2019. Yeah, it was a while ago.
Yeah, I mean, the mists of time, right?
Yeah.
You are our only guest who has ever done a live interview. Wendy met you at a fancy hotel in LA and interviewed you.
Not that fancy, but yes.
It sounded fancy. I don't know.
Debut books don't get you fancy hotels. But it was a cute hotel. It was cute. They had skulls everywhere. So it was very on point.
Nice. That's all I want is skulls at my hotel. So I'm excited that I get to talk to you this time. And we get to talk about your new book, Kismet.
Yeah.
So do you want to tell us a little bit about it?
So Kismet is set in the wonderful world of wellness in Sedona, Arizona. I should say it's the white world of wellness. You know, it's the goop wellness. And it follows this woman, Ronnie Khan, who's Pakistani American, and she moves out there with her guru of sorts, this woman named Marley, who's a socialite turned wellness person. And she's trying to, you know, just figure out who she is because she's been under the thumb of her aunt her whole life. And she's decided, I'm going to live my life now. It's time. And all these healers start turning up dead in very gruesome ways. And so then they have to figure out who's doing it, how to stay alive, and why are the ravens talking? But they are.
I love the talking ravens. I was like, wow, you're really going for it. There's like chapters of the ravens and the town and kind of this like presence. It's very spooky.
So I live about 20 miles from Sedona. The wildlife is, I mean, I tweet about it a lot because there's so many wild animals here. There's about 4 adolescent ravens right now who are just running wild outside, and they cause a ruckus every single day. And they're hilarious. You know, I love them. I love the animals. So I wanted to have them represented. I didn't think I was going to do it so literally, but I did. it's a book. It's fine. If you come out to here, it's really about the wildlife. You know, it's about nature. It's about hiking. It's about being outdoors. But then there's this whole other human world that is happening that can be at odds with that.
All the descriptions of the desert at night and the feeling of eyes watching you and like all of the sounds of all the creatures, I was freaking out. I'm not an outdoorsy sort of person.
No, I was not either. I was, you know, a fashion girl living in Manhattan. And then I moved out here because my dad's out here. And the first few nights you're out here, and first of all, it's dead silent, right? And I'm used to cars and traffic. So I'm like, you sleep. And then you start hearing the coyotes screaming outside your window at like from 11 p.m. to like 2 in the morning. And it is the freakiest thing in the world. I'm so used to it now. I just think it's hilarious. We have a coyote who kind of hangs out outside our house now, and he's fine. But when you first get here, you're like, what the? So anytime I have visitors, I'm like, listen, you're going to hear some noises. It's fine. They can't get inside. Don't worry about it. It's going to freak you out.
I just kept waiting for, I'm terrified of snakes, so that's what I was waiting for in your book, like someone to step on a snake.
I know we have a lot of snakes around. I know that there's rattlesnakes around. I've never seen a rattlesnake knock on wood. I've only encountered maybe 4 snakes, and they were all harmless ones. So
that's too many.
I know. There were two, and I gotta find this video. There were 2 snakes having a little love fest in this fountain we have, which we don't run because, you know, drought. And I was just like, I guess that's the love den for the snakes. Oh my God.
Yeah.
I know.
It's such a great setting for a thriller, though.
Like, right.
Nothing I'd ever read before. Yeah.
I thought if I'm here and I don't use this setting, it's going to be a waste of everything. Like, I should put it in a book. It took me forever to write it, too, because I couldn't figure out what the story was. It was like, okay, you're here. There's critters and white people. Then what?
Like, all vibes, no plot.
Yes, it was all vibes. So that I had to figure out the plot, which took forever.
Let's talk a little bit about the main characters. So first of all, we have Ronnie, who, like you said, she has been living with this very abusive aunt and doesn't really know who she is and is trying to find it through maybe not the best way.
So Ronnie, I wanted her to be as fish out of water and unsophisticated and naive as I was when I was 18 and I moved from Texas to New York. And this is in the 90s. So it's not, you know, while the internet was around, we had no social media and whatever. So I show up and everyone is just like leagues beyond me in life experience. I had maybe kissed one person when I moved there. And I was just like, you guys are like that. Okay, this is different world. You know, I hadn't had a drink ever. You felt like an alien, you know? So I wanted her to have that. But at the same time, it's like, how do you do that in 2022? You know, how with social media do you make somebody have that strict of an upbringing or be that secluded? And so it ended up being that her aunt had to have her under her thumb, which I was really conflicted about because when you're writing characters who aren't white, it's very easy for people to then say this character is representative of everybody, of the culture. Mm-hmm. And so while, and I know people who are this, you will read it and will see some of their relatives in this aunt, because we do all have relatives who are just a little much. I just took her aunt like to a 10, you know, just like cranked it up and made her completely awful. I feel like I should state that my aunts are lovely and wonderful women. And if they're listening to this, I'm sorry. Yeah.
So she meets Marley. I love the way she met her. Her boss, who is also a woman of color, is like, you need to be more empowered and sensitive.
You need a spine, girl. Yeah.
Yes. Sends her to this seminar.
Yeah. And it was some, you know, Instagram guru lady that the boss, Farah, had seen. And so she was like, I'll pay for it. Just go. And she does, she goes and she doesn't tell her aunt. And she just says she's working late. And so Marley starts trying to get Ronnie to stand up for herself and be more assertive and all this. And so, you know, after like 6 weeks of these courses, Marley's like, by the way, peace out. I'm moving to Sedona. And Ronnie has no idea what to do with herself. And so she tags along and mm-hmm. shows up in this world. She's, you know, she's never left New York. She doesn't know what Arizona's like. And so she just shows up here. And as things go, she ends up being in a relationship similar to what her and her aunt were with Marley, where she's doing all the housework and the chores and she feels like she's the help. And so it was just, it's interesting to see how she kind of repeats her life issues, but then tries to get over it and beyond that.
Yeah, I love that parallel. That was really interesting because it's like she's looking for this brand new life, but just repeating those patterns of trauma, which is what
we all do.
Yeah,
we all do it.
Yeah. And then Marley is just the epitome of that white woman thing where it's like, oh, I'm manifesting my dreams. And it's like, is it magic or is it white privilege?
It's always white privilege. And she's trust fund kid. So I've written so many versions of this book, and one had her really in depth on her mom, Joan. So Marley's mother, also a socialite, keeps cloning her dog and naming it Marley. And so that's kind of gives you an idea of what Marley's personal life was like. So she also is escaping from that and going out and trying to become basically the next Gwyneth Paltrow out here, you know? But it's not easy to strike it big when everyone in Sedona is a healer, like literally everyone. Every strip mall here in every corner will have psychics and healers and crystal shops. So she has to try to make a splash to really stand out from everybody.
And she does that in a...
a Trumpian way.
Extremely white privilege kind of way. Yeah.
Yeah. So this area is, well, physically beautiful. It is very conservative and red. And so I wanted to include that because you'll see Trump flags outside. You see really off the wall stuff that you don't equate with wellness and the hippie world, but it's how the whole QAnon stuff happened, you know, with a lot of wellness people. There's a woman I met here who's actually a shaman, and her name is Britt. Hence, there's a Brittany in the book who's a shaman. And she was at my house, who was a friend of a friend, and she was telling me that Trump made the chemtrails go away. And I was like,
oh, wow. Oh, how did he do that?
Yes. Oh, okay. We're going there. Okay, you need to get out. You know, it's like, no. So it's a lot of that.
It's like that extreme libertarianism where people are going to do what they want to do and they're not going to listen to the establishment.
Arizona. I mean, it's beautiful. And there are some really kind, wonderful people here. But there's also a lot of people who think this is still the Wild West. And it's still manifest destiny time. And they need to have their guns on them when they go to Walmart. Because, I don't know, there might be a shootout at the corral. I mean, there might be actually these days, but it's really bizarre. It's a really strange, very specific to Arizona vibe here.
Yeah, because I see some commonalities with, I'm from a pretty small town in central Ohio, and there's definitely like the Trump flags and people with guns at Walmart and everything. But the like healing aspect, the kind of hippy-dippy stuff added into that is really fascinating.
Yeah, it's weird. You know, it's definitely a strange combination.
Well, let's talk more about wellness culture, because I have a lot of thoughts on this, and I know that you do from... from reading this book. But one thing that I mean, I'll admit I am definitely drawn to some aspects of wellness culture, and that is because I'm a woman with chronic pain that like no doctor has been able to solve.
Which you understand helps a lot of women feel more empowered about their health, because one, like, I have chronic migraines, and so, you know, while I'm not an essential oils person, I do understand that there are facets of wellness that can be helpful. And also there's that sense of taking control of your issues when the system and the medical world and insurance is failing you. So I absolutely understand the draw to wellness. However, there are, and I dive into this a lot in the book, the Columbusing nature of wellness, which, you know, and I group myself in on this because I do it too. It's not just white women. I think it's everyone. Kind of like, we all burn sage. Well, that is not our ritual to do, is it? Or and if you start to hear about how Indigenous folks are having trouble getting sage now. So there are things that I wanted to address, sort of how we co-opt culture. And I specifically did it with South Asian because, you know, I'm South Asian. And the fetishization of cultures without really knowing those cultures and without wanting to dig into it. You know, like how people will quote Rumi everywhere, but they're also very Islamophobic. And you're like, but he's writing about God and this is, he's very Muslim. Like, what? Okay, wow. So I included Rumi quotes on the wall in this made up wellness institute, the Kismet Center. And they had Rumi quotes on the walls in every room. But when Ronnie says, oh yeah, Rumi was Muslim, there's like panic for a minute, you know, like the white women panic because they're like, oh no, that's not the kind we wanted. We wanted the Hindu Indian stuff, you know, and it's just,
oh my God. Like,
yeah.
Yeah. There's this whole, I don't want to spoil anything, but there's like an event in the book that is,
everyone talks about it.
Oh my God. I was like full body cringing reading that part. It's so horrible.
I've ever written. I won't lie. And it's based in reality. I
was wondering.
Okay. So this scene, Marley throws a party at the Kismet Center and she makes it into a Bollywood Indian extravaganza celebrating Ronnie, who's Pakistani. And it's all these older white women going on and on about India and how when they went, there were elephants and everyone called them Memsab, and can she call them Memsab? And she's just like, oh my God, somebody kill me. So that was actually based on, I was at a wedding and this was in New York, it wasn't in Arizona. It was my boss, it was sort of my boss. She was a fashion director above me. Her husband is British and older. And I don't know if you know where this is going, but he started chatting to me and it's fine. And he's like, you know, I'm not going to do the accent, but he was like, my family really had a lovely time and when it was colonial India. And I was like, yeah, I think our families were on opposite sides. It wasn't great for everyone. You know, partition happened. And he was like, oh, yes, of course. But he's going on waxing poetic. And I'm just like, how do I get away from this man? And then he leaned in and he's like, you know, I always thought I'd marry an Indian girl. And I was like,
ew.
oh, I gotta go. I like just ran. I ran to the opposite side of the wedding. I was like, oh, dear God. Oh, like, what? So it's, you know,
Oh.
I've met people who just have such a hard on for all things Indian, but they don't understand what has happened since the 1940s. They don't understand how partition happened. They don't understand that a lot of people who are Pakistani, like my parents, are born in India. So they don't grasp the cultural differences, and it can be really annoying. But I decided, let's put it all in one big, horrific event
Oh,
and
you did.
let people just cringe. Just enjoy the
Oh,
cringe,
yeah.
guys. Get a
So
cringe
much cringe.
workout is what that is.
Yes. But yeah, it's like, of course you had a good time in colonial India, old British man. Like,
Right?
what?
I once went on a blind
Oh.
date, like an internet date, you know, app or whatever, with this guy, and his grandparents were stationed in India, you know, British stuff. And I'm like, great. His sister's adopted Indian. They adopted her from India, and all his ex-girlfriends were Indian. And I was like, I'm not joining the menagerie, dude. This is creepy. Like,
That's so creepy.
it is, no, we're done. This is weird. So
Wait,
there's,
he told you all that? Like on the date? He like
yes.
volunteered this information?
Yes. And I was like, this
Oh.
does not appeal to me. Danger, danger, gotta go. There are people who want to eat, pray, love their way through the subcontinent. And that's fine, but understand the culture and the, you know, the different cultures and the subcultures within when you do that. And unfortunately for Ronnie, the white women she encounters do not understand any of that.
No, they certainly do not. Yeah, that scene was horrifying, but I was wondering what it was. I was like, this is too
Like she
real.
did
That's
this,
so
something
specific.
happened. Yeah.
We got the Columbusing of wellness culture. That is a really good term for it, because it
Yeah.
is, I mean, it's yoga and it's crystals and
And
it's
it's
sage and it's
henna.
everything.
And
Oh, yeah.
there are things where, so not only is sage and Palo Santo getting harder and harder for indigenous people to source responsibly, nobody's really, and there have not been that many articles written. There have been some. Crystals and crystal mining is very bad for the environment and also bad for people who have to work in the mines. But nobody talks about it. You know, it's like, oh, no, look at this lovely crystal I have. It's like, okay, well, what was the environmental impact of mining that?
That's a really good point.
Yeah. So hopefully, maybe these discussions will come up a little bit after people read my book. I definitely try not to burn sage anymore. You know, we have purple sage growing on the yard, and I'm like, let me figure out how to use that instead of buying it and taking it away from somebody else. So I think that there's small things that we can do to be, there's no ethical consumption under capitalism, but I feel like we can be better about how we handle things while still enjoying wellness.
I switched to burning lavender, and that's
Ooh.
fucking rad. It smells really good.
I do spray lavender on my, Ronnie does this. I spray lavender on my sheets every night because scorpions don't like lavender, apparently. And we have scorpions in the house. Like, you know, I live on a
You said all
mountain.
the animals stayed outside.
Listen, we have the house sprayed. So if they come inside, they're already dead, right? Or they're going to be. But I worry that my dog will get stung because she's so tiny. So I have a paranoid ritual every night of hosing my bed down with lavender spray because I'm just like, no scorpions, please.
I
None.
mean, that's also just like a lovely smell that helps you fall asleep, so it's
Sure.
nice that it kind of overlaps, but
There's always a moment when I'm in bed with blankets up and I'm like, what if there's a scorpion in my bed? And then I have to get up and check because I'm crazy.
Of course you do,
Yes.
obviously.
Yes.
Ugh. So Since you mentioned Bean, we have to talk about Bean for at least a few minutes. She has fans. Her fans want to know. I got to see her right before the call. I got to see her little face.
And you met her in person at BoucherCon.
I did.
I dragged my poor little dog to, you know, a book conference, and she was just with people, fury.
Same Bean, yeah. Same.
Yeah, Beanie is all of us. She's just this tiny, hilarious little monster. I love her. She is just the cutest dog, but she's also probably one of the funniest dogs I've ever met. We have a neighbor dog who comes over, the black dog, and she gets a little jealous. And he, God bless him, he's the biggest, dumbest dog I've ever met, but he's so sweet. He's a pit mix, and he's just, I don't know if he's been mistreated or what, but he was terrified of us for a long time, and he would only come over if Beanie was out. And if Beanie was out and was with us, then it would be okay for him to come by, you know, because he was that scared. But now I'll give him food and she'll want it. And I'm like, girl, you don't even like kibble. Like, what are you doing? You won't eat kibble. But if he has kibble, she has to have it now. It's like, okay.
Of course.
Fine, Beanie. Yes.
But she's famous not just for being cute, but for her coyote vest.
So, okay, when I first moved here, I thought, and so I moved here in end of 2016, right before the election, which was such a brilliant move on my part. I just thought, if I move my dog here and she gets eaten by a coyote, I'm never gonna forgive myself. I'm just not, you know. So I found the coyote vest, which is a Kevlar vest in a bright neon pink, and it has these spikes, and I'm sure you guys have seen it on the internet. It went viral, and James Corden was making fun of it on his show.
He made fun of it?
I'll send you the link. Yeah. He was totally making, it was a whole segment on Beanie. And I'm just like, what?
I didn't think anything of it
because I'd posted that photo before. And then I woke up the next day and people were like, dude, your dog's on TV. And I was like, what? How? So yeah, she got a little famous. And now all she does is lie around and eat and demand belly rubs. And, you know, she's such a diva, but it's fine. We give in.
That's the life.
It is. God, I want to be her.
Well, let's talk a little bit. I know since we both share this experience of writing with chronic illnesses, I would love to talk about, like, how do you do that? Because during the pandemic, it has been a struggle. It's like you feel like shit, and then you're supposed to, like, write a book.
And even,
like, what?
Beyond having chronic illnesses, I think, and I was talking to two different writers about this last night, because I think everyone is really feeling like, I should be doing more, I should be doing this, but you can't. Yeah. Because the world's a garbage fire right now, and every day there's, like, new horrors. And how can you create when you need to rest and let your, you know, be happy and feel some joy? It's hard. But yeah, I have chronic migraine. If you follow me on Twitter, if I'm tweeting a lot, I'm just really stoned. Like, that's just it. I'm always really stoned. I'm fine. I work out. I write. And then I get stoned. And that's me every day, because there's almost always a headache looming. And so it's just kind of like, let's just nip it in the bud. But I think what I've had to learn is, it's okay to take days off. It's okay to not do anything, even if your editor has a deadline for you. It's okay to be like, I'm just going to rest, because I think daydreaming is such a huge part of my process, and letting my brain just sort of wander. I always joke that I get my ideas when I'm stoned and lying in bed, and then, like, all of a sudden they pop, like when your brain is off, you know, it's the back brain. That's what Caroline Kepnes calls it. She calls it the back brain. So when the back brain is chilling, then you can be like, oh my God, this idea, that's perfect. And that's how I always end up figuring out my plot and, like, things that are tripping me up. But I definitely have days where I can't even look at my phone or my computer without throwing up. So I'm just going to not even deal with it. And that's just life. You know, you have to make peace with it and not beat yourself up, because what can you do?
Yeah, I have a really hard time with resting. My chronic pain is such that, like, most of the time I can work, but it's, like, not great for me. I need to have limits on it, but it's kind of like I can keep pushing up against it, and then I don't realize I've gone too far until I'm like, oh, shit.
Mm-hmm. You have to learn your limits. And there are some days when I can do, like, oh, I just got through 50 pages, and I wrote 5,000 words on this, and then there's going to be the next couple days where I don't do anything. Because sometimes when you push yourself too hard, it's like, you're done. We have to learn to give ourselves grace the same way we give it to other people. You know, Like, you wouldn't expect somebody else who's chronically ill to constantly work, work, work. So why are we expecting it of ourselves?
I think it's something we just as a society need to learn that there's, because it's just capitalism. It's
it
not
is.
Like Puritan
and it's also,
fucking
let
work
me be,
ethic.
Let me be perfectly honest. It's the book publishing world, you know, like the book a year thing, which I'm trying to do right now. And it's not a feasible concept, you know, for some of us to churn out a book a year. Like for me, it takes me about 2 years to get a book together. I'm writing one on Fast Forward right now. And I'm just like, what am I doing? I think that the book publishing world needs, and also maybe readers, because I know a lot of readers love the whole book a year thing. It's very difficult to do. And it's very taxing on your mind and your spirit and your body. So it's good to, you know, keep boundaries with that sort of thing, which isn't always possible because you have contracts and deals and you have to do it.
Yeah. Plus, I mean, they're not paying us enough to do that, most of us. They're not. Yeah.
Listen, very few of us are ever going to be rich from writing. So,
That's, so it's like they want you to hurry up and finish this book so they can publish it
and
not
you might
market
have,
it.
But like, what if you have kids and a job and like life, especially in the last couple of years, it's just been overwhelming. It's very challenging for people right now to write. And I think we all need to be like, okay, that's fine. That's okay. But one of the things I think that's come out of the pandemic is that I think people are going back to or getting weirder in a good way. You know, I feel like I'm going back to what I was like when I was 17 and I wanted to do all these cool things and I was willing to try it and spy it. It's like, let's be weird and gothy and this and who cares, you know? And I think that's really healthy and good for us that we're a lot of people are just getting weird, you know? And I'm like, God, get weirder, do it.
Yeah, I've been feeling that way too. A book I'm working on now, I don't even really know what genre it is. I just fucking love it. And I'm drawing on all of these things that I loved when I was a kid. And it just, I'm like, fuck it. The world is ending, maybe. So,
write the weird, like the book I'm working on right now is, you know, it's about a woman who's being stalked and gets attacked and all this stuff. But it's also, it's about Jin. And it's about my family stories of Jin. And it's weird. It is a weird little book. Knock on wood, I finish it. It's just like, if I never write another book again, this is the book I want to write. So it's like, okay, let's get weird. Let's have some fun with it, you know?
And that's a real thing we have to think about now. It's like, if I never write another book again, because the world is over, society collapses, there's no more publishing, whatever.
Yes.
Like, you know.
Kind of.
Can't wait. There's no time.
We don't know what's going to happen the next couple years. But it's a little bleak. And that's another thing. It's like, how do you create things that aren't equally bleak right now?
Yeah.
Because I don't necessarily like writing bleak stuff. Like, if I'm going to write something, I'm going to add humor to it because I feel like it's easier for myself writing and also readers to ingest it and to really think about it if they're laughing. That's just how I do things. And so it's been a challenge to have that humor when you're like, oh, the world is bad things again. Oh, great. This is awesome.
I've been thinking a lot about what brings me joy, like what I would want to read, what I'm going to feel happy working on, because I spent most of 2020 and part of 2021 trying to write this super dark gothic romance about a woman with chronic pain, and it made me want to die. Yeah. I just hated that book. I hated that book, and I finally got to a point with it where I was stuck on this certain plot point. And I came up with several solutions to fix it, but I was just like, I don't want to write any of these. They're all so depressing. Yeah. I don't want to write this. I don't want to put this out into the world. So I just like shoved it in a drawer and was like,
and you
oh shit.
You can come back to it.
I don't think I'm gonna.
I mean, if it helps,
but I could, yeah.
I literally, for Kismet, I think I wrote like full books, 100,000 words, about 4 different times. I just hit delete and started over because I wrote it in first person. I wrote it in third person. I did this. I mean, I literally had entire side things on every single character and it wasn't working. So I'm one of the people who's don't be afraid to start over because maybe you'll use part of what you did. Maybe there's a scene that you wrote already that you're going to cannibalize and put in another book. Or maybe, you know, in a few years from now, you go back to it. You know, I always feel like it's never a wasted effort.
Yeah. You're absolutely right. I mean, the book I'm writing now has a little bit of the DNA of that book, and then I can see like other things I can use. And I think it's so helpful to talk about all of the sort of false starts and dead ends and whatever as a writer, because you just see,
the second book is like, I know that there's a whole trope about the second book. The second books are really hard.
This is my third book, and I think it's even worse.
My
second book, there was no global pandemic.
Yeah. So third book is not at all easy either. Like, I'm really just like, this book is so weird. I don't know if people are going to get it. But second books, I just was like, what am I doing? Was the first book a fluke? Like, am I done? What? And so you have to get beyond that point and stop thinking of it that way and just focus on, like, almost in a vacuum. You know, like, don't think about anything else. Just focus on what the book needs to do and what the story wants to be, and do that. But, oh my God, it really took me forever. And I was like, oh God, I'm such a failure. I can't believe it's taken me so long. But yeah.
Yeah. We're all just like sitting in our little rooms alone, feeling like failures, and everybody's feeling the same
way. Like, literally, I've had this conversation with, I think, three different people yesterday, all in publishing, you know, two writers, an editor, about how we're all feeling like failures right now, and how we need to just chill out and like let ourselves feel things, but also not make it about our lack of productivity. Because I don't think in history, like, our favorite authors and the classics, they wrote, what, 2-3 books, some of them? Maybe 4?
That's true.
Let's take our time. It's okay. Publishing, give us a break. Give us time.
It's like capitalism. Give us a break. Leave us alone.
We need moments to sleep and go on vacation, if that ever happens again.
Yeah, if it ever does.
I know.
Well, this has been so delightful getting to
chat with you
and Bean.
And Bean.
Well, you already mentioned what you're working on next, and I'm very excited to read that.
Yes. So
could you tell everyone where to find you on the internet to wrap up?
I am on Twitter and Instagram under Dramina, Drramina.
There's three.
Yeah, sorry. It was a nickname a friend of mine gave me when we first met in New York, like when we were 18. I was a little dramatic. Shocking. And Beanie has her on Instagram, which is miss.beanie, if you just want dog photos, which I totally get. You know, I'm with you. Skip the chatter and go to
whatever
the
brings
dog.
You joy.
Yes, that's the thing. Find your joy right now, everybody. Like, after this, I'm getting an astro reading, because that's going to bring me joy. So I'm doing that.
Amazing.
Like, yes. So find whatever brings you joy right now in writing, in reading, in everything, because, oh my gosh, we need it.
That's it for this episode of Unlikable Female Characters. Don't forget to subscribe, and you can also follow us on Twitter at UnlikableFCPod for updates, book recommendations, and angry feminist rants. Our website is unlikablefemalecharacters.com, and we're also on Instagram at UnlikableFemaleCharacters. Thanks for listening.